So I'm sitting here with Michelle of Align Rehabilitation, and she is really growing and has something coming up on May 3rd.
On May 3rd, Align Rehabilitation will be having our grand opening of our brand new physical therapy facility. We are directly next door to Real Life Prosthetics, who has also expanded their lab as they build out their prostheses. So May 3rd is grand opening. I invite everyone to come tour both my brand new facility for physical therapy treatment, as well as see what Real Life Prosthetics has done with their new lab.
And what time is it?
It's 11 to 2, and then the ribbon cutting is at 11:15.
And so what's the address?
The address is 3435 Box Hill Corporate Center Drive, Suite C, Abingdon, Maryland, 21009.
There are a lot of great podcasts out there. And one of the things that I've been doing is recommending a podcast at the end of each episode. So make sure you stay tuned to the very end, because I guarantee you the podcast I recommend, you're going to love. On this episode of Conversations with Rich Bennett.
I could not spend the night at anybody else's house because I thought I was going to throw up. So I would call mom or dad and be like, you need to come get me. And I genuinely thought that. I did not know I was having anxiety. So that was genuine. And then my parents didn't realize that it was anxiety, because how would they know, right? They thought, oh, well, this is what she's telling us and this is what this is. Mm-hmm. But looking back now, and what I say to other parents now is, if your child comes back to their comfortable environment and all of a sudden, a half an hour to hour later, they're better, it might be anxiety. Wow. Because if you really have the stomach bug or something like that, right, you're not going to have this miraculous recovery. Right.
Coming to you from the Freedom Federal Credit Union Studios, Harford County Living presents Conversations with Rich Bennett.
Come on.
You're faster than me.
Guys.
Hey, yeah.
That was quick.
We've been
together.
It's 24 and
13. Oh, man, you already said it. I was going to ask her if she remembered the date.
We're going to be talking about, you know, mental illness, the type of mental illness that individuals have had and what they're doing to overcome it. I don't know if you ever overcome it, but control it.
Yeah.
Doing to control it. So I'm just going to go around the table, have everybody introduce themselves, and then we'll just get right into it. To my left first, of course, you've heard her before on the podcast. Actually, you've heard everybody here on the podcast before.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Pope. I am an author and a facilitator, and I also like to consider myself a professional anxiety client, because I've had it my entire life, and I've been in some form of treatment since 19, and I'm 39 now, so I feel like that makes
me
a professional.
1939?
Well, no, since I was 19.
Oh.
And then I'm 39 now.
I thought you said since 1939.
Really
wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, 20 years of experience, I guess, if you want to say that.
And the other one's texting away. He's like, who's this guy sitting across from me?
Hi, I'm Rondi Nassar. I'm the Acting Director of Population Health and the Public Information Officer for the Harford County Health Department.
What do you mean, Acting Director?
They're working on taking the acting part away.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I thought it was just because you're on TV all the time, the acting.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm acting every day, let's be real. Yeah.
I wasn't going to say that, but, you know, that's okay.
We're all acting.
I'm Andrea Pappas. I'm the Bureau Director for Behavioral Health Services at the Health Department.
And you work with Rania?
Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Fortunately. We've been dressing.
I don't.
And the other one you hear all the time.
I'm Wendy Beck, founder and executive director of Rage Against Addiction and co-host.
So, Lindsay, let's start with you, because before we were talking, you mentioned some things which I find pretty interesting. So, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, because you go through anxiety, right?
Oh, yeah. yes.
So, can you even pinpoint what actually caused that?
You know, for me, I think it's biological, because it was as early as I can remember. And then I also think, like, tracing back to my childhood, I was absolutely highly sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, going to the beach, like, you see kids playing in the sand and playing in the ocean. That was not me. I was terrified of the ocean. I still am, actually. I'm still afraid of the ocean. But, you know, even the beach sand, I was afraid that I was going to get sucked under like quicksand.
Really?
So very just kind of standard life things like that, I did not really enjoy because of my anxiety. I was constantly like in fear, kind of had like a little bit of a grip on me in some form or another.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people, I've heard of people being afraid of the ocean, but not the beach.
Yep.
Part.
Mm-hmm.
What about mountains?
Oh, yeah, that wouldn't have gone over well. No? I didn't really have that exposure as a child, but I would imagine that I would not have embraced anything like that because of how just fearful I was and kind of everyday settings.
So as a child, were you doing anything or were your parents helping you? Did anybody even know, really?
No, they did not. I think because I was, you know, a good kid. I got good grades. I was involved in things. Mm-hmm. I did, you know, theater, played in band, you know, so it's like those signs that you look for, quote unquote, yeah. You know, I didn't have them. I was just a happy-go-lucky kid, so nobody really knew what I was struggling with. And then internally, of course, my anxiety would tell me, like, well, you can't talk about this because you're going to, you know, basically people are going to think you're nuts.
Right.
So you have to kind of keep it to yourself and hide. So that's what I did a lot of. I kind of just masked myself for years.
Do you guys see that a lot in health with the health department?
It really depends. I think with some kids, it actually manifests physically. So, you know, you might have some kids that all of a sudden have stomach issues, gastro issues. You know, where is that coming from? Because, again, they may not be able to articulate at that time, hey, I'm worried. I'm anxious. They don't maybe know what that means. But for them, it's my tummy hurts. My head might hurt. I don't feel well. So it kind of presents differently with every, you know, child, really.
So anxiety can cause, like, stomach aches and everything?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All this time, I thought something else was wrong
And again, it can be all ages that it affects that. But with kids, they don't know how to, like, explain that.
Wow.
So it's hard for them to kind of articulate, oh, I'm worried. They might not know what worried
is. So I guess it could cause like stomach aches, headaches, and basically all kinds of things at the same time,
mm-hmm.
which... And then, you know, it could be like, well, I don't feel... And parents may think they're sick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, that was me. I could not spend a night at anybody else's house because I thought I was going to throw up. Mm-hmm. So I would call mom or dad and be like, you need to come get me. And I genuinely thought that. I did not know I was having anxiety. So that was genuine. And then my parents didn't realize that it was anxiety because how would they know, right? They thought, oh, well, this is what she's telling us and this is what this is.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back now and what I say to other parents now is if your child comes back to their comfortable environment and all of a sudden, a half an hour to hour later, they're better, it might be anxiety.
Wow.
Because if you really have the stomach bug or something like that, right, you're not going to have this miraculous recovery.
Right.
Even if you're home.
I mean, honestly, as a parent, like, I've noticed those, like, looking back, but at the time, you're kind of like, you're fine, you know, don't, you know, you'll...
Yeah.
It just, once you get to school, you're going to be okay, or, you know, once you're there, you'll feel differently. And I don't think that we realize that these types of things happen so early on.
Or then you'll have parents, which there's nothing wrong with this, they'll go, okay, we have to go to the doctor. You know, do you have a bug? Do you have something? Like, should we get tested? You know what I mean? Like, all of these things of, do you have a gastro? Like, is something actually wrong? Or it only kind of comes out later that, hey, there may have been more going on than we thought physically. Maybe it was more mental.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And even, like chest pains, mm-hmm. chest thing, you know, things like that. I worked with a young man a couple years ago that it was, I might be having a heart, I think I'm having
the
a
panic
heart attack.
Attacks,
you know, I think
yeah.
I'm having this, I think I'm having that, like... And this was at the height of COVID, so it was, do I have COVID? Like, is it the COVID vaccine? It was all these other kind of things that he thought was correlated, and it ended up being panic attacks and anxiety that he had never, he had bouts of it, again, in his past. There were some
mm-hmm.
kind of stomach issues, but then as he got a little bit older, it progressed into panic attacks, which he thought was physical, not...
Right. Which I guess it doesn't help a lot of times when people are going through these to go on and look at the internet doctor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Yeah, no. Not a good idea.
You know, or the anxiety talk or whatever mm-hmm. they have nowadays. Because
mm-hmm.
I hear it all the time from my daughter. And she was like me. You know, it's like I thought I had everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but,
mm-hmm.
wow.
Well, I feel like, too, like when I was growing up, the word anxiety was never used.
No,
now
it
wasn't. every single person has some form of anxiety at some point. And now we're identifying it. And like you said, it's like you don't really know what it is, but it's there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like those were like kind of the start of my symptoms. Like when I was little, like I always had stomach aches since I like could remember. I've always had stomach aches. I've always had like horrible migraines, and I never really realized. I always thought like, oh, it was something I ate, and or maybe it was like, oh, I didn't have a cup of coffee that day, or oh, I didn't have this, or I didn't drink enough water. It's constantly like, why do I have a head? You know, when you're Googling, why do I have a headache today? And it's like, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, you have a brain tumor. It's like a bunch of different things. But it's like, it wasn't until I got older till I realized like this was all connected.
Yeah, you mentioned like the migraines.
Yeah.
So, and I know like chiropractic care helps with migraines. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of you know, can that help with anxiety or depression?
I don't see why not, honestly.
I mean, because you're basically helping, it's something in the brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, everybody's
different.
I think everybody's different. What probably helped you might not have helped me. Whatever helped this person might not help. I think everybody, because I feel like you said everybody probably has, like, some type of form of anxiety. Like we always say, like, mental health's not one box, like, not everybody's going to be like the same way. So for some people, like acupuncture might be it, but then other people they might need medicine. Other people might need therapy, or they might need, you know, maybe it's just like, oh, I need to do my 10-minute walk every day or something like that. So I think it's like for everybody, it could be different. There's so many things out there. There's so many incredible things out there that I think help people. So that's like the benefit.
Well, and speaking of many things out there, because I didn't realize there were so many different types of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Andrea, any idea how many there are?
A lot. Because,
I knew about anxiety, depression, and suicidal thoughts, which is called now, what's it called now?
Suicide ideology.
Yeah.
Suicide ideation.
But apparently ADHD also is.
Mm-hmm.
And now that it's no longer ADD. They just put ADD in with ADHD?
ADHD, yeah, because you usually, more often than not, you do see that kind of hyperactivity with it
rather
than, I want to say just, but you see that more often than not than what we previously saw with just ADD.
PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
God, what else?
There's bipolar disorder.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about
personality
that.
Personality disorders, which is a whole nother, you know, kind of type of mental illness. Schizophrenia, you have type of personality disorder, schizoaffective, schizotypal disorders, borderline personality disorder, histrionic, narcissistic.
OCD. OCD is a mental illness?
Yes, it's a type of anxiety.
Yeah.
Really?
A manifestation of anxiety.
I thought it was just being neat.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
Yeah. Because again, for some people, it can present. And become so consuming. It can really take over their everyday life. The rituals that they have to engage in, it can be totally consuming.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize
that.
And
again, even along with OCD, it can potentially, on the flip side of it, you have hoarding behaviors, you can have people skin picking.
Wait a minute, what?
Skin picking, like skin.
Just like nervous, like reactions or something like that.
All right, I've heard of cutting, but I've never heard of skin picking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this all falls under like the umbrella of anxiety.
Yeah.
So like, how can you know if you have a child, especially, you know, parents who now look back and be like, oh, wow, she was having a stomach ache and underneath the table at Denny's crying that her stomach hurt when, you know, and then when we left, she was fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Those types of things. And then, you know, you're, as a parent, like you said, someone might be the type of parent that rushes them off to the hospital or the doctor, and then you have other ones that'll be like, oh, you'll be okay, it'll pass, whatever.
And so, others, I think they're faking it.
Well, you don't know.
Yeah.
And it depends on your generation.
Well, true.
Where you have a child who is having this fear of going to school or doesn't like his teacher and all these things, and I don't feel good, and the grandmother saying, you're fine, and then the mother's saying, being more compassionate because she's more up to speed, and like, you know, I think it's generational as well.
I agree with you 100% there.
Yeah,
just seeing what my daughter goes through, and some people in the family be like, oh, no, you'll be fine, just, you know, don't worry about it, and say, yeah, no, it doesn't work that way. It definitely doesn't work that way.
Again, don't worry about it. Stop thinking about it. Yeah. It'll be okay.
It's all in your mind. Well, no crap.
How do we be kinder?
And that's the thing. I think it's, you know, trying to, this might sound silly, but, like, notice patterns.
Yeah.
Be observant. Be aware. Kind of make those notes of, like you mentioned before, like, if your child is okay at home but not in social settings, okay, maybe is it what's happening in a social setting? Is it all the too much peopling? Is it too much stimulation? Like, what is it? Kind of being aware of their possible triggers, kind of being aware of when do they act up or when do they express that they're not feeling well, being supportive of them and trying to figure out what exactly is that pattern, that then you can go talk to someone or go look at resources of, hey, every time we go to Denny's, every time we go to the movies, she kind of, you know, she gets upset. Like, what's that about? Okay, well, then maybe it's something that it's too much stimulation, or maybe it needs to be on a smaller scale, or how can, maybe, you know, therapists or other, you know, trusted helpers help them work through that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. I know one of the things that I like to share with people from my experience, one of my pet peeves is, you know, if you're being vulnerable and you're expressing your anxiety to somebody and they say, well, you shouldn't be worried about that, or, oh, just relax. Something like that is actually pretty offensive to me.
Right.
And it's offensive because I would like to think that if, you know, it was a friend in a wheelchair coming to you and you wouldn't just say, well, just get up and walk, right?
Ooh.
Because you can't.
Yeah.
So for me, it's literally the same world sometimes. Like, do I wish I could flip a switch and stop worrying? Of course I do.
Yeah.
But it's not that easy for me. So it's kind of like you have to put into perspective, oh, wait a minute, you know, this is actually, there's a lot involved with this. And it's not that that person is, you know, choosing to worry or choosing.
Mm-hmm.
It's that their brain, that's where the brain is, you know, and it's not going to be like that easy, just, you know, get up and go sort of thing. There's a process to it.
Yeah.
So kind of honoring that, holding space for that, and not just being so quick to being like, you know, no, you should relax.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's because, and everybody's different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've tried that earlier on with my daughter before we realized, you know, what that she had anxiety. I don't know if I tried it with my son or not. I know people have tried it with me, and I was just like, yeah, okay. But I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew, but I didn't know.
Right.
So we are you're one of the things you mentioned that you're doing, and I'm going to get it wrong.
Okay.
Anime, not AnimeCon.
NamiCon.
NamiCon. I was close, same letters. So I mean, explain everybody what that is, what you're doing with that.
Yeah, I'm so excited. So that's the National Alliance of Mental Illness, their annual conference. So I'm going to be a virtual presenter, and I'm going to talk about how when you're approaching your recovery from a mental illness, you know, medication is certainly a piece of the puzzle for many of us, myself included, mm-hmm. but it is not, I don't believe that it is solely the answer.
Right.
I think that you need to explore other avenues as well and get yourself a well-rounded approach because that is what worked so well for me. So I just like to sort of share my story. And I know for me, I was fortunate that I just did a lot of like self-advocating, looking and finding people and building up this kind of like well-rounded circle of support. But I just want to make sure that other people are aware of that you can do that for yourself and you should do that for yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
And when is that?
That's going to be June 6th to 8th. I don't have my exact time or day that I'm going to be on yet, but it'll be somewhere in that window.
And it's virtual, so we all can watch it?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, you know you got to send us the dates.
I will.
I'm going to have to put it in the show notes.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so everybody knows. Like, ooh, go watch Lindsay.
Yeah.
So now she's not only going to be a famous author, but she's also like a famous, I guess, want to be a television star.
Keynote speaker.
Yes. Well, actually, you know what? You can actually put that. Once you do that, put that in your bio.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's important.
Definitely.
And then if you want to become a television star, I can, you know, I know somebody that can hook you up that's already a television star. Right, Rania?
Yes, that's correct.
Awesome.
Another public health matters.
So, Lindsay, how old were you when you really discovered that, you know, there was a problem? And then what did you do to start controlling it?
I think I always knew that there was a problem on some level because of just a genuine, just being uncomfortable in my life, which was for me most of the time. When I went to college, I was having like pretty much daily, sometimes multiple times a day, panic attacks. But all of it was hidden. Nobody knew.
How do you hide a panic attack?
For me, my symptoms were like, you know, sweaty palms.
Right.
You know, my chest would start to feel funny. My heart would start to, like, beat weird. You know,
yeah, it scares the hell out of you.
I'm dying, you know. Like, and I would just try to breathe through it. Sometimes I would, you know, go to the bathroom. That was, like, my way of getting out for a few minutes and then coming back. And just trying to breathe and just, like, for me, at that point of my life, I was just so mortified at the idea of anybody finding out my secret. But then now I'm like, oh, man, you know, I've just found I'm so much better now that I just accept myself.
Right.
Such a better place. But back then I just wasn't there. I wasn't ready for that. Luckily, I had a really good roommate in college who actually told me, you know, I think you need help. So she was the first one to really cue me in. And so I got help on my campus. That was kind of step one for me.
Okay.
And just having that easy access was great. I know a lot of campuses do that, so that's, I think, a really important thing. And then since then, I just, you know, learned the value of it. So as an adult, once I graduated, I just sort of continued on my own.
So what are you doing now?
I am doing such a wide variety of things. It's kind of hard to keep up with me. Of course, writing writing is a huge part of my recovery. So for me, having my books out, you know, is a huge part of therapy. Of course, I am also in therapy myself. I'm on medication. I also will do things like, you know, massage, energy healing. I find physical activity like yoga really awesome and rejuvenating as well. So to me, it's a well-rounded balance. And also spirituality is a huge part of me. So even just, you know, going to church, you know, is really therapeutic for me. Just spending that intentional time with the God of my own understanding. And sometimes for me, that's like a walk outside, you know, and just kind of soaking in that positive energy. So all that, you know, has been foundations for me.
All right. I know what all of those are except for energy healing. So what is energy healing?
Yeah, so energy healing, I mean, we can certainly have a whole other discussion on that.
Oh, no, go ahead. We're all here now.
There's a lot of modalities, because we were talking about all different mental illnesses. There's a lot of different modalities of energy healing as well. But it's basically kind of fundamentally, I would say, the belief that, you know, you can also help yourself recover. Like, you have energy within you that's positive healing energy. So you can not only help yourself, but there are also people out there that are practicing and helping others. So, like, you can go, like, for me, I'm trained in Reiki.
I was going to say, like, Reiki. Then.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay. So I'm trained in Reiki. I have also been to other people that know Reiki. I've been to people that know, you know, I've been to so many different people. Just because I'm just an explorer, my heart. So I like to go and I like to try things. Like, I love sound healing. That's one of my things that I do. I love going to sound
Like the Tibetan drums?
Yeah, like drums, bowls.
Yes.
Yeah, I love all that stuff. So, yeah. And it's just like a cool, you know, cool experience. And I found that by just being open, I've just stumbled upon so many neat things. And they've really helped me. And it's just felt like a full circle sort of thing.
I got to admit, the sounds, because I do that now when I go to bed. And I do not watch TV before I go to bed, you know, or eat. But yeah, if you just ask Alexa, Alexa, play nature sounds, the Tibetan drums, the rain, all those different things are so soothing.
Yeah,
it helps me go to sleep. And my Himalayan salt rock, which my wife calls my night light.
I love
what's
that.
It kind of is.
It is not a night light. It's a Himalayan salt rock. It helps. I get. Oh, go ahead. You're going to crack on the sounds too.
No, I love it. No, I'm just saying.
Well, I had to crack up because my wife came in one night, one night, and I was already asleep. Of course, then she woke me up. Oh, no, you're not asleep, which woke me up. What is that noise? I said, Tibetan sound or Tibetan drums. She goes, it sounds like monks chant. I said, no, it's Tibetan drums. Alexa, play John Denver. I'm like, really? Because she can fall asleep to music. I can't. Yeah. I used to be able to, but now that song sticks in my head. And I wake up in the morning and thank God I'm a country. It's like, no. But now she can fall asleep to him. Or the rain. Especially, yeah, the rain sound.
Oh, yeah.
But well, I think we've learned that we can train our brains. And that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
All of these positive things that you're replacing or incorporating into your daily life is changing your brain, and that's helping to heal some of the struggles that you're going through. And I feel like, how do we get our teenagers to, like, get on board with this kind of stuff because
that's hard.
It's happening earlier and earlier and earlier. So we might notice that these young children are having stomach aches and stuff like that, but I feel like it just continues to manifest as they get into their teens and their preteens, and we're seeing so much more. Mm-hmm. And there, I don't think that there's like an outlet or a place or a space for them to go and feel comfortable. Like, you were in college and you were introduced to something and you were like, okay, this is what I need to do. But they're very resistant,
mm-hmm.
and they're very private, especially with this whole social media world right now. So,
yeah.
You know, how do we, I feel like that's like the next wave of like what we need to get a handle on is for these teens, because there are so many things that are affecting them that we've never had to deal with before.
I mean, there was a group of us the other day, you know, at the health department that kind of came together that I think, you know, all well-versed, but, you know, informed people, you know different techniques, no different modalities, and we were literally like, what are we doing with these kids? Like, how can we help them? Like, what do we do? Like, these kids are presenting so much more severe than I feel like we've ever seen. That, you know, and is that social media? Is that COVID? Is that, you know, what is it? Everything?
Combination of it all.
You know, everything. And then, you know, unfortunately, a barrier sometimes is the parents. It can be, especially if a parent is, oh, I don't care if they smoke pot. I don't care if they drink. They're still developing, you know, so it's kind of that's all. Influencing how they're feeling, so
it can even lead to worse things.
Exactly. So if they're not feeling well, we're now introducing substances.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good combination, you know. So kind of having that parental support is good, but on our part, providing the parents with that education of this isn't helping them. You think that's helping them and calming them down, it's actually not.
You know what it reminds me of, and this is what scares me now, especially in the state of Maryland, that they made marijuana legal, because you know parents are going to use it for their kids. It reminds me of when kids were babies. They, you know, you always hear about, oh, just put them in front of the TV. It'll calm them down. That's what it reminds me of. You know, sit the kid in front of the TV, they'll be fine. Well, all right, well, here, give them some edibles or whatever. They'll be fine. You give them a drink, they'll be fine. No. Because it can lead to things being worse.
And they're still developing.
So, right.
You know, at this point in time, if they're developing and they're already starting to feel anxious, starting to feel depressed, whatever it may be, you're now introducing a substance that, just like we were talking about positively reprogramming, you're almost enforcing, enhancing negative programming.
Yeah.
Because they're still developing, and now it's, oh, this drug will help me feel better. Will it, though? Or can we implement other things that are more healthy and holistic to help them feel better?
I also think... And shut up, you'll go through later. I also think that, hell, I don't even know if there's a way around this, kids are afraid to talk about it with other kids, afraid that they'll get picked on. But I think if they do, sort of like what we're doing here, I think it would help. But at the same time, I don't know if the laws and everything, if they can.
It really depends. Like, I know something that we've started recently is we have an adolescent group. Like, we're trying to build that up. We're even starting it virtually. Will that kind of, entice people more to be able to, or parents to be able to, okay, just log into this while they, you know, there's other children, other responsibilities. We're trying to have that where it is led by a therapist, and it's a group of kids suffering from mental illness, maybe some substance use, and that they can talk in an environment that, hey, this is what substance use can do to you, but let's talk about coping skills, let's talk about healthy behaviors we can engage in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're trying to build that up, but even now, it's hard to get them engaged, and a lot of that is the parental buy-in at times, or kids just, I didn't feel like it tonight, but maybe that would help you, you know, maybe you should.
With the schools, and I do know that adults go into schools and talk about this, but have, like, graduate, I guess anybody over 18, that, like alumni from that school, do you know if any of the schools have reached out to alumni to come in and talk to students?
So I'm not sure about that, but I know that they, over the past couple of years, have a group of kids that do struggle with that, and they're almost kind of as like a... I guess an alliance of sorts that they're trying to not only help themselves but then mentor other younger students. So it's kind of usually more of the upperclassmen, but they're having these groups where it's kind of, they're talking about mental health. They, I know it was pre-COVID, I'm afraid, having like kind of like a mental health fair of like,
right,
what can we do to focus on, you know, kind of like the, I know we were talking before, like paint by numbers, things like that. Well, where's it a safe space? Where can we talk about this? So I know they were looking at that before. I know they try and have that, you know, focused into a lot of their curriculums now, but still it's, again, the kids wanting and feeling comfortable to be able to express themselves. And again, just to for them to determine who's a safe person.
Yeah.
To talk about that stuff too.
Man, it'd be nice if more kids would just speak out about it. And also if the parents would realize that, yeah, there may be something else there. You know, no, it's just, because and you see a lot of it with bullying, you know, which I believe, you know, a kid being bullied can cause anxiety, depression, that we know definitely suicidal thoughts it can cause. Mm-hmm. You see it all the time. But a lot of times, and I've heard this before when my daughter was younger, you know, from the other parent, they're, oh, they're just kids, and, you know, that's what they do. Yeah, no. It doesn't work that way.
And we have to look at, unfortunately, the lasting impact that those different incidents can have
on
someone.
Well, I think that's what we don't realize that. And I don't think that there's, like we've said, there's not one-size-fits-all kind of recovery. Like, you've taken the whole, you know, spectrum and tried all of these different things, but I don't think that we're implementing them in their lives young enough.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you notice your child is having these stomach aches and you take the pattern and then you say, okay, well, maybe this is a pattern. So what do we do? And maybe we need to do some calming exercises or we need to do this. And that's really, I feel like, very progressive, like your energy healing. That's not the norm. That's not what society wants to think about. Like, that's effort. So, you know what I'm saying? So then we fast forward and now we've got like a full blown anxiety from bullying or trauma or divorce and all of these things. Mm. And they have absolutely no coping skills whatsoever that they might have benefited from had they learned it at age 5. And I think that that's where we're missing. That's the miss here. You know, if your parents had noticed or knew that you were struggling, you might have been able to learn those coping skills a lot younger, but then as you get older, there's that resistance to parents in general. So now we want them to listen to us and this is how you need to cope. They're like, they want to follow their own path and do their own thing and they don't want to be bothered.
And it's like, you know, certain events can almost shape their mentality about themselves. That then they almost anything in their life, then they group into that. So think about a kid that's bullied or called or called overweight, that's already shaping what they think of themselves. So then any event that kind of goes along with that, they're putting in that kind of fat bucket. They're putting in that thought, in that image of themselves. So anything, even if it's the most benign comment, can you eat that?
I have a teenager and I, you know, you can't do that because they're taking it and they're internalizing it completely different than you're saying it.
Exactly.
And you don't think that you're being harmful at all, but it's like, how can I walk on eggshells to protect you? Yeah. I can't.
And it's one of those things that, especially when patterns have already been in place or developed or thoughts that were beyond your control, your involvement, beyond hers. But then it's almost, how do we build them up? How do we strengthen those coping skills? How do we help them realize they're more than those words? Like, that it's not that. And it's...
Okay, so how do we do that?
I know.
Teach me.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that how can we better help boost their self-esteem in good ways and healthy ways? That it's not, unfortunately, social media is not the place to boost your self-esteem, but like working with someone that can help you learn to value yourself so that, again, when people do make these comments, they're able to kind of roll off your back. That takes time because, again, all those comments are just adding to that, wow, I suck. Wow.
I mean, and that happens to adults, too.
Absolutely.
People who are in marriages and, you know, they have a spouse that, you know, belittles them or something like that. I mean, it doesn't have to be a lifelong experience to create, you know, insecurities and anxiety. And again, it takes a long time to get over that. And
to
you have to have
that.
a willingness to accept that you need to do it.
Yeah. And not only a willingness, but the ability to see that you're more than that and not mm-hmm. just live like, yeah, I do suck. Like, like, you mm-hmm. know, like, no, actually, that's their opinion. You know, I'm actually, right. I'm this, this, and this, all these wonderful things. And again, having the support systems in your life that are able to help you see that stuff.
Yes.
Something Wendy said when she said, teach me. So, you know, there are kids and adults can go to therapy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But is there something out there where it can teach the parents how to deal with their kids that are going through
problems? Honestly, something we've been toying with is, okay, if we have this group for adolescents, can we have like a parenting group too?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, while they're in their meeting, can we have the parents? Like, talking to them and educating them, not only about kind of the effects of substance use, but, hey, how do we talk to our kids?
Right.
How do we this? How do we that? But then also, you know, and we just had this discussion the other day, there's a lot of services that are actually available through Department of Social Services, which I think, unfortunately, a lot of people think, DSS, no, you're going to take my kid. But no. They
Wait a minute. That'll teach the parents how to?
It's something called in-home consolidated services.
Really?
So they actually can go out, and although it kind of has this stigma of, it's like a risk of harm assessment that they do, which sounds like, oh, you're going to take my kid. No, it's, they come in, what do you need? How do we help you? How do we help your children? How do we help you? And kind of that there's different resources that people aren't aware of that can really help change that dynamic inside. Again, especially if there maybe are issues, whether you know, the parents are going through something or they just don't know how to talk to their kids. So there's services out there that can really help. There's, you know, something else called kind of care coordination. There's, you know, Empowering Minds. There's organizations that are able to do more work in the home that can kind of help these families figure out how to family.
Well, I feel like that is obviously, it's awesome, but I feel like people don't usually understand that it's needed until it hits a crisis.
Yeah, that's true.
So
too.
When we hit a crisis, then we are desperate to figure out what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you know, from my own personal experience, losing a child, you know, I was grieving very heavily. So, you know, but I still got up every day. I went to work. I, you know, I did everything that I needed to do. I grocery shopped. I made sure my child got to school. But on her side, take it over on the flip side, she lost her mother during her mother's grieving period. So now we've got a child who doesn't feel like they're loved enough because guess what? Their mom is somewhere else. With, you know, she never missed a day of school. She never was unfed. She was never unclothed. But there was this dynamic that was happening that was shaping the relationship in that time, that age from like 10 to 13, where after 3 years of grief, even though I was doing everything that I was supposed to be doing as a parent, I like woke up and I'm like, oh, there's dust in that corner. I need to get my life together. I need to, you know, do these things that I was just not able to see. So when you're caring for a child as well, you know, you don't realize what they're going through when she's at an age where she's developing herself. So like, then it became a crisis. So then I'm like, you know, she was in a place where she needed me to be able to help her, and I didn't even know what was going on. So she's got anxiety. She's had loss. She has grief. She doesn't understand. So that's what I said about, like, once you get to that crisis point, that's where we kind of fall into, you know, maybe we should have helped ahead of time, or now what do we do? And then there's this, you know how hard it is to help somebody who's in a situation where they can't even, like, get a hold of themselves.
And that's the thing, too. To your point, you know, crisis can be anything. It can be, oh, you know, something happened at school. That, you know, now the school's involved. Of, hey, you think your child's going to school, but they haven't been to school in 3 weeks. Like, what? Like, things like that, where it's now you have other things coming to a head, but what has been kind of spiraling up until this point. So trying to, I think a lot of times we react then rather than being proactive, but sometimes it's not even knowing. So how do we better know? How do we better get in touch with our children, ourselves, like our own styles, you know, working with them?
I mean, we can't predict life. That's the thing. Yeah. So we just have to keep doing what we're doing. But these types of conversations, I feel like, are really helpful.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things parents can do is be compassionate to, you know, don't tell them they're faking it to try to get out of work or school or whatever. I mean, look at everything. If it's happening, there's going to be a pattern. And look at that pattern. And then you know that you can seek help.
Kind of like I know you were mentioning before, kind of sometimes it is biological.
So yeah, right. Well,
okay, kind of sometimes look at yourself that, hey, if you remember or you even currently experience some anxiety or some depression, or you did, then maybe that's what you're seeing in your child. But you know what I mean? Like being open to that and aware of that and looking at, hey, well, I remember feeling that way or I remember being like that. Well, then maybe that's what's manifesting, you know, with your child. That, again, being present and were you received when you expressed that? Maybe receive them differently or make sure that you're supportive of them and not just brushing it off.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I know for me, I have a 3-year-old and I think because of, you know, being in my own recovery for as long as I've been, I've had this hyper awareness of how I parent her. And I'm very highly conscious of what I say, what I do. And of course, I'm not perfect by any means. I've messed up millions of times by now. But like, there's this example that comes to my mind. Her and I were at the mall, and you know, she's at the age now where she's starting to pick things out. She's telling me what she likes, and she's really developing her personality. And so she, you know, picks out this yellow dress, and I'm looking at the color, and I'm thinking about my skin tone, and I'm thinking, well, that color wouldn't look good on me. And I was about to verbally say out loud, well, let's get another color. And luckily, I caught myself. Because I saw the joy in her face when she was looking at that dress. And I thought, no, I'm not robbing her of that joy because of my thoughts. So I just, zoop, and I said, okay, you want the dress? We'll get the dress. And we got it. And she was so happy and so just like lit up. But I think so many parents maybe, if you're not as active, like you're saying, if you're not as active in your own recovery, I would have just, whoop, that would have come right in my mouth. And it wouldn't have made me a bad mother by any means.
Yeah.
It just would have been, I wouldn't have even thought, I shouldn't say that, right? But I think so many of us as parents, we just constantly, probably without even thinking about it, interject what we think is our best, right? But then we're kind of robbing our kids of the opportunity to really discover what makes them happy and what brings them comfort, because we're sort of trying to like overcompensate, I guess, in a way. We mean well, but it's just the results
could be damaging.
Exactly.
When they're younger. And I'll never forget this. My sister took my son out. Okay. That was not my son, by the way. So my sister took my son to the store, and of course he wanted this and all. And she told him, she goes, now, Danny, you know, there's a difference between wanting and having and needing something. If you need it, then yes. But if you want it, do you really need it? Do you have to have it? He caught on pretty quick. And the next time she took, every time she took him shopping, Robbie, I want to have to need that. What's she going to say? Boy, she spoiled that boy. He got everything. Not for me. I didn't fall for it. So Rhonda, with you, because you said with your, the anxiety happened big time during COVID.
Well, I think COVID made me realize that I had anxiety.
Oh, okay.
I definitely had anxiety my whole life. I know we talked, like I said, since I could remember, I've always had stomach aches, headaches. I've always had like the body reactions to my anxiety ever since I could remember. But it didn't happen. I didn't realize that I really had it and I need to get help until COVID hit.
Okay.
So one day I was home in Allentown, so it was like a long weekend, and I went home to Allentown, and I went to go visit some coworkers at the old health bureau I used to work at in Allentown. So I went to go see them there, and to my surprise, what I thought was going to be like a really exciting thing to like see my old coworkers and talk about stuff, we heavily talked about COVID the whole time, and I didn't, you know, the whole conversation, I mean, it was like an hour and some, and we were talking about, you know, what they did and what we did and their, you know, what they dealt with, what I dealt with, and it was fine. And then after I left their house, I went to go have dinner with my parents. And when I went to go have dinner with my parents, my body felt different. My mom made one of my favorite Middle Eastern meals. She made grape leaves for me. Like, I mean, that's like it's like not an easy thing to make. She made grape leaves for me and we sat outside. It was a nice day, but I couldn't eat. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't eat, why, like, I was reacting differently. It was, just, like, very weird. It was just, like, such a weird feeling. Like, I wanted to cry right away. I couldn't understand it. And then I was staying over at my friend's that night. And I got to her place and I just, like, broke down and started crying. And she was like, you know, what's going on? I was like, I don't know. But I couldn't eat. I felt differently. And then just, like, broke down and cried. And then that night, slept it off, was like, okay, like next morning, all right, we have to go out. I was supposed to go on a trip with my friends. We went to get brunch and everything was fine. And then that week was when I was starting therapy. And then
when did you decide to start therapy though? After that or before?
Before that. I wanted to start that, but I thought it was just to have someone to talk to, but it wasn't until then I told her what happened that week that she was like, you know, I think this is more than what you think it is. It probably a form of like PTSD, but mainly, you know, it probably revolved around my anxiety. And that's when it clicked for me, and all of my reactions in my past, my stomach aches, my, like, you know, just random crying, things like that, I just realized, oh, wow, like, it was, like, my anxiety.
Right.
So it was kind of then where I realized that COVID, like, working at the health department, dealing with COVID, dealing with the public, all the other stressors from doing that, that's when I realized, oh, like, I really, like, have something that I need to work on. And so I ended up, so the only thing I do, so I go through therapy now. I continue to see my therapist once a week. And that has helped. It has helped greatly. Like, there's still so much in my recovery that I'm still working on. So much I'm learning about myself. Like, again, I never realized that my, like, stomach aches when I was a child was kind of connected to that. And what kind of, like, you know, how my personality plays into my anxiety as well. And that's been really helpful. I do a lot of yoga, too, which has, like, absolutely been one of, like, my helps a lot. And I used to also be that person who was like, I'm never going to do mindfulness. Like, this is, like, I'm never going to meditate. And now, like, I meditate a lot more than what I mean, I never did. I remember being in college and I was helping my friend out being in mindfulness. She was doing a study on mindfulness and I was helping my professor out. I was like, yeah, I'll be in the study. I mean, I was horrible. You have to check off, like, every day that you did your mindfulness and what you, I mean, I never did it, so... I've, like, grown a lot from that and learning different ways to, like, kind of help me and setting boundaries and talking about it more. And so it's been helpful. I mean, I'm not, like, the perfect, like, person yet. I don't think I've found everything that's going to help me.
Right.
There's still some things that, you know, I feel. But I think, like, going to a therapist, talking, realizing, like, you know, as an adult, how things in my past have affected me, I think that's been really, really helpful. And I will say, like, it's also, like, I've had really good coworkers, because if it wasn't for my coworkers, I wouldn't be in therapy.
Yeah.
My coworkers were the ones who were like, maybe you should talk to someone. Maybe, you know, COVID support. Had more. Yeah, maybe they had, because those are the people you spend, like, most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about it, I spend more time with my coworkers in a day than I probably do with my husband.
God, that just sounds so weird.
I know.
For her to say husband.
Yeah. If you think about it, like, I wake up, you know, we see each other, and then, you know, he's going to the gym, I'm going to work, I spend maybe 8+ hours with my coworkers every day, and then by the time I get home, you know, you have dinner, you hang out, and then it's time to go to bed right away. So
for those of you listening, just I don't want you to get the wrong thing in your mind. So Rania actually just recently got married. That's why I said it, because how long have we known each other now? 3 years?
It's actually been 5. It'll be 5 in June.
Seriously?
Yeah, it'll be 5 in June. Isn't that crazy? I know, it's wild.
Oh, that's right, because COVID was 4 years ago?
No, COVID 3 years? Was 3 years. It'll be three years ago this month.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, isn't that crazy? So yeah.
That is nuts. 5 years?
5 years.
And you forgot me?
I did not forget you. Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen each other. It's been a few months since we recorded our last podcast.
So I was the cause of your anxiety.
No, you weren't causing my anxiety. You were not causing my anxiety. You have to connect it back to your personality, too. My personality, I want to literally save the world. Like, that's my personality. So when COVID happened, I tried to, in my mind, save Harford County.
You were putting a lot on yourself.
I was putting a lot on myself, and then I didn't realize that was how I was my whole life. Like, I just wanted to save this person, save that person. Mm-hmm. And COVID happened. I was like, all right, I need to get this person vaccinated, that person saved. I need to help this person. I need to help that older person. And then when it's like, you know, there wasn't enough time in a day, and I was spending my entire day at work. I mean, I was getting there early, staying late just to help, like, all the, you know, in my mind, I wanted to help the elderly.
getting all the elderly, making sure they got their vaccine, making sure they had a ride scheduled, making sure that they did this, they did that. So then I didn't realize, like, that takes a lot, like, out of you, because I'm trying to help all these people, but it's like, what about me?
Yes.
Like, what about myself?
Can't help people unless you help yourself.
Exactly. So now I'm like, I'm in that mind, so that when I talk to my coworkers, I'm like, you know, I appreciate you putting all this work in and helping me, but like, what are you doing for yourself? Because, you know, your health is also important. So like, if I don't have, God forbid something happens to you, then what happens to all the people that you're helping?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to be able to continue to have that same person. So it's so much. I mean, there's still, again, there's just so much that I'm learning. There's so much I'm trying to now help my coworkers, because my coworkers were there for me. So that,
right.
I want to make sure that I have that. I'm there for my coworkers as well, and I'm helping them and promoting having that healthy lifestyle and stuff like that. As adults, a lot of our anxiety is connected to work. And, you know, again, we're literally at work most of the day. Like, that's literally a good percentage of our lives. But it's like, especially for people who work in, you know, behavioral
public health,
even just any type of healthcare, you know, our whole hours of our days are there to help people, but we also have to make sure that we're also taking care of ourselves.
All right, so you see your therapist.
Yes.
But how often do you see a therapist?
Once a week, actually.
Once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I know the way you work, and I'm sure Andrea sees it too.
Yeah.
Do you know when to stop
mm-hmm.
yourself from trying to take on too much?
So that's still something I'm working on.
Should I answer this, or you?
Basically, yeah. So Andrew was one of those people that was very helpful for me as my coworkers, but yeah, it's I'm still working on it. It's
okay.
not. It's
but you are working
easy.
On it.
Yeah,
okay,
and
good.
It's not like. So, like, you can go, like, seeing a therapist is amazing, but that's not the only answer. Like, you can go
right.
see a therapist, but if you're not doing the things the therapist tells you,
right.
as we talk about therapist, then it's, like, kind of useless. So, that is one of the things I'm working on, and it's not, like, just because she tells you this, you're like, oh, my God, you're right. I need to stop work at the time that I'm done, and that, like, it doesn't click like that.
Yeah.
And so it is like it's not, like, an overnight thing that happens. So, sometimes people get discouraged with that. So,
yep.
I think that you get into therapy and you're like, okay, this person's going to fix me. It's going to happen in a week. Like, that's it. One session, I am done. No,
it's ongoing.
Yeah, I've been in therapy now for it'll be for almost 2 years, and it's, you know, I'm still working on it. And it's like, I don't want people to be discouraged that they think like a therapist is going to help them overnight, because it's not. It's a two-way street, just like a relationship. You know, your relationship doesn't work one way. Your relationship with your therapist, it's a two-way street, you know. They tell you, they give you suggestions, you work on it, you come back to them and say, hey, you know what, I did try this, but this is something, and then we work on it together, so.
Yeah. I look at it this way, you know, how often do you go see your doctor? At least once a year,
yep.
right? How
uh-huh.
often do you go to the dentist?
Mm-hmm.
How often do you go to if you go to a chiropractor? So a therapist, to me, is the same way. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's.
Consistent.
Yeah, you have to keep going, because
mm-hmm.
it's helping you to, I guess, try to align everything
mm-hmm.
or whatever. That's not
mm-hmm.
the right word.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, that works.
Yeah.
No, and
I said it, so it's the right word.
I love that you brought up the whole inner work thing, because I was right on the same page. Like, when I started my journey, it was, okay, this person can fix me.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me years
mm-hmm.
to figure out, nope,
yeah.
I got to do the work. And I spent so much money and so much time and energy. I went to so many people because I was so convinced that it would never be for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was finally, like, when I woke up and realized, like, no, I need to take ownership. And I need to be a partner in this, like what
mm-hmm.
you're saying, that my life really changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Actually, because with you,
mm-hmm.
because this happened, no, it happened before you got married.
Oh, yeah, this happened before
you
got married. Yeah, yeah.
So when you're, at the time, fiancé,
mm-hmm.
when you said something to him, how was he?
I mean,
obviously, he was okay. Otherwise,
yeah.
he wouldn't have gone to the altar.
I mean, yeah, I think, like, he was supportive. You know, again, his personality and my personality were two totally different people. And
we also
experienced two different lifestyles growing up, too. Two different,
right.
you know, family members. Everything was so different. So it's really also important that you have someone that's there and supportive for you and, you know, ask you, like, you know, how are you doing? What can I do to help you? How can they be that support? I know the one thing that I worked on in therapy was that when it was really that height of COVID and I was working so much, you know, everybody was talking about COVID, you know, mm-hmm. this time last year and 2 years ago. I mean, that was the conversation everywhere. And when it happened, that's when I had my panic attacks.
You couldn't get away from it.
I couldn't get away from it. So it was like, you know, it was a conversation with him. Here is how I need you to support me in this. If there's a conversation like this and you see me, you know, you see me having those, like, reactions to mm-hmm. it, maybe help me and, like, take me out of that conversation and pull me away and then kind of, like, let's change the subject.
Right.
So it's really important if you do have that. Like, I'm lucky that I had someone to support me. And it's good, you know, having that support. But also, my conversations with him might be different than other people's. I don't need my husband to fix me, but sometimes I need my husband to just sit there and listen.
Yeah.
And that's really important, too, for people with mental health. I know we brought this up the last podcast. You know, before you have a conversation with someone, ask them, do you have the mental capacity to talk to me right now? Because sometimes that person, like, so my coworkers, I like to do that with them. Hey, do you have the mental capacity to talk about, you know, something right now? Or do you just want to vent? Or do you need me to help you with something? Do you need me to fix something for you?
Yeah.
And I think that's really, really important because, and that was something I learned in therapy, because I don't need someone to, maybe I don't need someone to fix me. Maybe I just need someone to help me vent
mm-hmm.
at that point. So I think that's also really, really important, whether it's your husband, your boyfriend, your friend, your family member, your parents. I mean, especially with your parents, at least kind of say, you know, I don't need you to fix me. I just need to vent about something and I need you to listen.
I'm a good punching bag.
That's good.
I have people vent to me all the time, and I just sit there and listen.
And that's good. And sometimes that's all.
And sometimes they don't want a response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most of the time, they just want to get it out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sometimes I walk away with a black eye or two. Not that.
You can't tell people I beat you up. Yeah.
But no, you're right. And that's, a lot of people just need that. They just need somebody to mm-hmm. vent to.
Yeah. Well, we need a way of getting it out. And that's why I tell people, too, that if you have, like I've dealt a lot with persistent loop negative thoughts, and they can, the more that you let them exist in your energy, the stronger they become, because mm-hmm. it's almost like they start to feed off of each other, right? And then before you know it, it's like you can't think about anything mm-hmm. else. So there's like, before you know it, it's like you're in this cloud of negativity. And then that's when things become scary, because mm-hmm. you're like, I don't even see the light. I don't see positivity anywhere. And that's where scary things can happen to yourself or, you know. So what I like to tell people is exactly that. Like if you can't verbally vent it, that's where I like to write. And I tell people, you know, you can write in a journal and you can literally, like, don't be afraid. Write out your whole mm-hmm. feelings. I have written down some things that I would not share with anybody because they would be highly offensive. And, you know, you can burn it when you're done. You can do whatever you want. You don't have to keep it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that way it's just physically it's out of your mind and it's transferred somewhere else. Because the energy, to me, it has, in my experience, become trapped. And that's where it gets stronger, and you just need that release. And whether that's venting verbally, writing it down, doing a physical activity, mm-hmm. you know, or a combination of all of the above, it's just so important to get that out of your system.
I know my daughter did that when she was younger, journaled a lot, and mm-hmm. she didn't throw them away or burn them. I don't think she did, mm-hmm. but I know she's going back and looked at some of them now, and she laughs about it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Now, have you tried journaling yet?
No, I am not a good journaler type of person.
You can journal on your phone just to let you know you can talk into it.
I know. I'm not like a good journal type of person. For me, it really is that like physical activity, like movement type of thing, mm-hmm. because I spend most of my time like writing and looking at a computer and on my phone working that way. So for me, that was one thing that I didn't find, I think, helpful versus like spending that time away from like any type of device, being in that
right.
own, like my own space.
Yeah. So Andrea or Ryan, I guess either one of you can answer this. So we know for suicide, there's one number you can call. Is it 211? No, it changed again.
It's
what is
988.
988. Mm-hmm. But for somebody that's going through an anxiety problem, a panic attack or whatever, is there a number that they can call or even a parent or a loved one can call?
So, honestly, I think especially for adolescents, what's really nice, and I don't know the number off the top of my head,
okay.
there's a text line that kids can text. Parents can also text, but that might be sometimes easier. I think
right.
to just say, like, hey, not feeling that good, or feeling overwhelmed, or and you can essentially be texting back and forth with an actual person. It's not a bot or anything like that. And kind of just saying, you know, and again, if for whatever reason it does escalate, then they would dispatch, you know, personnel that are in your area.
Okay.
So that can be a more of a warm line rather than a hotline, because a hotline, again, is usually when...
Crisis.
Yeah. So warm is kind of just to be able to have a conversation.
Well, no, this has been really helpful. I feel like, you know, it's just the icing on the cake of the whole issue. But, you know, it has to have has to start somewhere.
So the health department, how can they, because I know you guys do a lot, do a lot of mental health, how can they contact you?
So they can either go to our website, harfordcountyhealth.com, or they can call one of our front desk specialists at 410-877-2341 and either ask about our services or schedule an intake appointment with one of our therapists or prescribers, and then we can go from there.
Anybody got anything to add?
I'm just happy that she got to do the phone and the website this time, and it wasn't me, because I'm always messing it up.
You're not always messing it up.
I had a laptop in front of me yesterday with the number, so I wouldn't mess up the MTRIP number.
The funny thing is, did you listen to the podcast yet?
I didn't know. I just got that you put it out.
So. You hear you type it away.
No way. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It adds to it. Ladies, I just realized I'm the only guy here.
You just realized?
I want to thank you, ladies, so much. Lindsay, thank you. Rania, it's always good to see you. Andrea, it's even better to see you. Wendy, I see you all the time.
Usually at the end of each episode, I'll recommend a podcast. In this case, I'm not going to do that. I just want to tell you all, if for some reason you're having any problems, talk to somebody, whether it be a friend, whether it be a relative, whether it be your parents or a sibling, talk to somebody. Hell, if you want, contact me. I'll be happy to talk to you as well. Talking about it does make a big difference. And if you're feeling suicidal, call or text 988. Again, that's 988, or you can even chat online at 988lifeline.org. It's 988lifeline.org. If you would like to be a guest on the podcast, or if you would like to recommend somebody for me to get on the podcast, or if there's a topic you want me to talk about, just go to conversationswithrichbennett.com, click the Be a Guest link, and fill out the form, and I'll get in contact with you, and we'll get everything set up. And while you're there, please subscribe to the podcast as well as the newsletter. And check out all my sponsors and, of course, my co-hosts. Please show your support for all of them as well. Until next time, my name is Rich Bennett. Stay safe, and thank you for joining the conversation.